Good morning. I'm Reverend Marjorie, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to First Parish. Each of you are welcome here, whether you are a longtime member or you just found your way here this morning. Each are welcome to safely bring your whole self into this meeting house where we hold many beliefs but gather as one. For the next hour, this meeting house is our sanctuary where all are invited to turn off your cell phones and to just be. This morning's reading is by Andre Mole. As we gather together, may we remember. When you share with me what is most important to you, that is where listening begins. When I show you that I hear you, when I say your life matters, that is where compassion begins. When I open the door to greet you, that is where hospitality begins. When I venture out to bring you to shelter, that is where love begins. When I risk my comfort to ease your suffering, when I act against hatred, violence, and injustice, that is where courage begins. When we experience the full presence of each other because of our shared humanity, because of our differences, that is where holy gratitude begins. May this space be a table that is not complete until all are welcome. May this table be a space of beauty where together we create a series of miracles and where all that we share is sacred. May it be so. Let us join in doing the unison lighting of our chalice. The reading is in your order of worship. Blessed is the fire that burns deep in the soul. It is the flame of the human spirit, touched into being by the mystery of life. It is the fire of reason, the fire of compassion, the fire of community, the fire of injustice, the fire of faith, the fire of love burning deep in the human heart, the divine glow in every life. Please rise in body and or spirit to sing our first hymn, number 134, Our World is One World.
Our world is one world, our touch is one of them. At this time, I would like to invite the youth and the guides of First Parish to follow me out to religious education. Good morning, everyone. I'm Lois Schiappa, a member of the Pastoral Associates. We take this time during our worship service to share with one another the milestones of our lives. We bring our concerns and sorrows, as well as our joys and celebrations, into this holy space. We mention issues in our own lives and in the lives of those we hold dear. Through this sharing, we sustain, support, and reach out to one another in our congregation. At this time, I invite you to share a milestone you may have. You may prefer to place a stone in the bowl in front next to Reverend Marjorie for your own personal remembrance or as a tribute to a loved one. Does anyone have a milestone they would like to share? We'll bring a microphone around for your information.
Hi, my name is E. Marie Pope, and I wanted to share that yesterday was my husband Doug's and my 40th anniversary, and we had a lovely dinner and just had a lovely time together. It was a great day.
Hi, I'm Betty Rose. And I just came back a few days ago from North Carolina and a visit with Audrey Kipp. And she wants to send her greetings to all of her friends here at First Parish.
Nice.
Paul Rising, brief update on Scylla's post-op course. It's progressing well in all spheres except for pain. She is transitioning off the heavy hitter, but trying to get by with regular tramadol and ice. We go to see the doctor for the four-week checkup in a couple of days. On a lighter note, I turned 75 yesterday. In this congregation, that's not much of an accomplishment. I don't I guess we age well here. But a few years ago, I made the reflection, I guess it started with my 50th reunion from different places, that sometimes you get acknowledged just for being around.
For all that has been shared, both spoken and quietly personal, may we hold these milestones in our hearts and reach out to one another in love. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah. So this morning's sermon comes with a warning. I made sure to put it on the front of the order of worship. Enough is enough. As I explained to the Board of Trustees this week, I am mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. I'm not mad at First Parish, nor am I mad at the town of Sudbury. I'm not even mad at the state of Massachusetts. I'm mad at the state that this country is in and the never-ending moment-by-moment violence that is taking place in our world. Yesterday morning, I was reading the Washington Post while the sounds of tanks, machine guns, and fighter planes literally shook my home. This weekend is the battle for the airfield that my neighbor Collins feels is his right to host in the middle of a neighborhood. It is a reenactment of a World War II battle right there on Lake Boone. Here is what I was reading to those sounds of war. The probability of global catastrophe is very high. The bulletin of the atomic scientist warned in the setting the doomsday clock at 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes before midnight earlier this year. On nuclear weapons and climate change, humanity's most pressing existential threats. The bulletin scientists found that inaction and brinkmanship have continued, endangering every person everywhere on Earth. Every day, it seems, brings with it fresh new horrors: mass murder, catastrophic climate change, nuclear annihilation. It's all enough to make a reasonable person ask, how much longer can things go on this way? Now that is a great question, especially since I literally am sitting at my desk hearing sounds of war far too close for comfort. The words, "you cannot stop violence with violence," run through my mind as I wonder if being mad at our government is the best way right now. Is that what we really need? I struggle with trying to pinpoint the right emotion. I wonder about people's motives, and then I wonder about what will motivate us as a species to demand change. What are the right feelings that will compel us to say enough is enough on a global scale, to motivate us to intercede and not to overlook or even tolerate the shift in our moral compass that accepts this culture of intrigue and engagement with violence, with the glorification of war? We live in a society that flagrantly honors violence and brutal heroes. A society that has put profit over people over and over again, has used profit and resources as a just cause for war. Why are we surprised when tragedies such as the shooting we experienced last Sunday evening in Las Vegas happen? Just hours after the Sudbury Interfaith clergy had our vigil marking the start of Domestic Violence Awareness Month right there out on the common, which never made the news, why am I surprised? We all know the news adage, if it bleeds, it reads. This week on Facebook, there was a post that shared, if we did not legislate guns after the shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School, there is no hope. Anything would be done after the shooting in Vegas. I just cannot fathom that our representatives have not and will not do anything to stem the tide of violence. Have we become immune to the stark reality and the shock of gun violence. We have seen plenty of mass shootings in this country. In 1999, teenagers in a high school in Columbine. In 2006, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, at a one-room Amish schoolhouse. In 2012, at Sandy Hook Elementary School. In case you're wondering, a mass shooting is defined as an event that includes four or more people who are injured or killed at the same location. The editorial board of the New York Times reported this week that over the last year, in 477 days, there have been 521 mass shootings in the United States alone. Let's let that sink in. 477 days, 521 mass shootings. Most of them we've heard nothing about. Texts go out warning students and personnel that armed perpetrators are wandering on college campuses and military bases. It has become a common occurrence. What causes people to take up arms? And I'm not just saying guns here, because cars and trucks are also used as weapons now. And planes, let's not forget that. And box cutters and dirty bombs and baseball bats and axes and sticks and stones and ropes and fists. Do we acquiesce to violence or intimidation through our silence, through our fear, through our complacency? Do we give over celebrity and power to perpetrators? Are we missing an opportunity to teach people how to deal with their frustration, their anger, their sadness, or mental illness before they're compelled to kill? This time it was a man described as a wealthy gambler who is maybe depressed or bored or frustrated or mentally ill. Maybe it was in his genes. His father was also a violent man, a bank robber. This week's violence began years in advance with a stockpile of weapons and ammunition. The perpetrator decided to shoot out the windows of his 32nd floor hotel room that he was living in above a casino that he had spent months in. He shot out his windows, literally engaging in target practice on random concert goers so far away he couldn't even see their faces. It was the smoke alarms from the smoke of the ammunition and the overheated guns that tipped the police off as to his location. That's how much he was firing. The news presents us with photos of the killer, and we look closely, trying to see it in his eyes, that cold-blooded killer stare. And we try to make sense of it all. But maybe there's no sense to be made. Killers come in all shapes and sizes, from children to teens to young adults and elders. Mass murderers can be milkmen, someone that you know, as was the case in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Amish country, when five little girls were tied up and shot in their one-room schoolhouse. That perp was mad at God for taking his daughter. The killers are students on college campuses, militants and homegrown terrorists. The doomsday clock is at 2.5 minutes to the end of time, so says the extinction scientists. Our world is clearly on the brink of something, and apparently the fear of God or the court's retribution is not enough to stop the desperate, those who do not care enough about life, including their own lives, to seek help or other means of expression. Add to that the political saber rattling and the threat of nuclear war or the stormy repercussions of climate change, and I do not know about you, but I am a bit stymied. I am mad. I am sad. I am perplexed. I do not understand how we got to this place of flagrant disregard for human life. How the wealthy are served and the poor are left without clean water and electricity in places today like Puerto Rico. But the news has passed, and it's not in the forefront of our minds. A couple of weeks ago, a member of First Parish said to me, "Please do not lose hope. We need your hopefulness, your optimism." But I'm not sure that my hopefulness and placating words of hope and love are all that helpful. Yes, they make us feel better or more comfortable, maybe less under siege. However, I think that we need to get uncomfortable, maybe even mad at unethical government officials and deceptive corporate executives. And I'm not saying all corporate executives or government officials are deceptive, but we live in a system that condones and encourages profit over people. We do. There is no way around that. I, for one, believe that we need to get focused and galvanized in order to turn the tide. How many more innocent people and children have to die for people of conscience to demand action, to take action? I know that we are not as stupid or gullible or easily distracted as those with political power believe that we are. We can see the record-setting climate change storms, the destruction, the lack of care and response. We can see the flooding, the oil pumping and fracking-induced earthquakes, the idiotic lack of care for the health of humanity, the greed condoned by stockholders of prescription drug companies, hospital care, private prisons, and so on. We see this. We can see the exploitation of our planet at the expense of those who come after us, all in the name of greed. My friends, it is official. We have a world of hurt on our hands. And it's also known that when there is this kind of anxiety and pressure, people begin to pop. They begin to act out. There is a total disregard at the upper echelons of corporations, Wall Street, and our government, the wealthy and the climbers who do not care about you and I, and again, think Warren Buffett, who does. The working class, which was once known as the middle class, they do not care about the poor or the incarcerated, which is the new and improved form of slavery. We are merely assets at best and a burden otherwise. We are a demographic or a market to sell to, and when our usefulness is spent, we become more than a burden. You can tell the conscience of a culture by how the poor, the orphans, and the elders are treated. Many in this country have to choose between medicine over food and or medicine over heat during the cold months. Those who are disabled are called freeloaders, or those who cheat the system. Have we hit the tipping point yet? Are we mad enough, or just distracted by the next edition of the daily headlines? The biggest joke this fall by far was when our commander-in-chief, and yes, I will say it, was irritated because the NFL players were taking a knee. When people in our country were without water and electricity. Really? One does not have to wonder too hard why the NFL players are taking a knee. How about in protest at how people of color are being treated in this country? People of color are being considered less than, even when they add value. That seems like a good enough reason to me for us all to take a knee. In my humble opinion, this country is not what it used to be. The promises, the hopefulness. This country does not hold the same values that our forebears once did. not the same integrity that Lady Liberty shone so brightly for. Or maybe it does. Think Columbus, or the settlers of this country, the colonists. I feel like I can personally speak to this because my 10th great-grandfather, Edmund Lockwood Jr., arrived in the New World with the Winthrop Fleet in 1630. He was one of the first 10 men to be declared freemen, settled Newtown, now known as Cambridge. My great-grandfather received land that was not the crown's to give or to sell. The land had been lived upon. It had been cultivated and worshipped by the first peoples, who were slaughtered if they resisted and employed as laborers if they were of a value and acquiesced. It was good times for white Europeans to expand out until the native peoples held their ground and died from siege and sickness. I know that it wasn't my grandfather who set the worth of the first peoples. It was the conquering wealthy of Europe, whose desire for more wealth and more power needed to be fed. Columbus, an Italian spawn of Spain, set the worth of the first peoples of the New World as he enslaved, raped, tortured, and killed all whom he encountered up and down the east coast of this continent. He claimed the first peoples' land for Spain, took their treasure home. These were the revered explorers of the New World. This is the holiday that we celebrate. All in the name of personal gain, fame, and wealth. But wait, the true founder of the New World was actually the great Viking explorer, Leif Erikson, who came to the New World 500 years before Columbus. He then peacefully settled a community at the mouth of the St. Lawrence River. One has to wonder why he is not celebrated as the great discoverer of the New World. Maybe because he didn't bring home the spoils to the crown. Here are two men, not to mention Lewis and Clark, who explored and discovered an inhabited continent with millions of first peoples living off the land. Profit over people was alive and well, even back then. Clearly, wealth and greed are not new concepts. They are endemic to our economic system, to our way of life, to how we historically and still do mark success, failure, and overall happiness. Make no mistakes about it, Columbus was a brutal man. And many of the statues that are being taken down in the South this year, those important men of U.S. history were rebel warriors, and in large measure, brutal men who thought it was perfectly okay to buy, sell, breed, and own human beings as property, as slaves. Many revere war, just like the sounds of my neighbors' cannons and machine guns as they fill the air around my home. Many say that all is fair in love and war. But if we look at real motives in any conflict, at some point, we will find this desire for resources and power at the root. Greed is a powerful aphrodisiac. Mahatma Gandhi once shared that the earth provides enough to satisfy every man's needs. I think he probably included women in that. But not every man's greed. Wanting more is a part of our culture. We are taught from an early age to want more. To want the latest, to want the greatest, the best, to be the best at whatever we do, to compete and to win at any cost. And the measure of such acumen is wealth. But we are not taught to be the kindest or the fairest, the most compassionate or patient. We are taught to distrust those who are different, those whom we do not know, and history has proven that we cannot trust. Over and over again. Those are the stories that read. There are nameless people out there who take advantage, who will hack our computers, steal our personal information off of Equifax, and then Equifax will profit. Those who will kill the innocent, who will steal our very lives for their own corrupted benefit. We have gone so far down this road of warped trust, allowing corporations and government, the ones we're supposed to trust, to poison our land and water, corrupt our food chain with hormones and pesticides, They, dare I say, we, by our inaction, have literally changed the delicate balance of an entire climate of a planet. I know that we, you and I, endeavor to keep the world in balance. We support watchdog organizations like Greenpeace, but the factories continually belch, the pumps pump, and the machines turn 24/7. At times I am stuck, rooted in shock and horror. Other times I march, I vote, I demand real and radical change, not incremental change based on balancing the bottom line. Trickle-down economics is a farce. We have been conned, and we will continue to be conned by the greedy. What can we do with only 2.5 minutes left on the clock to doomsday, to our very extinction? Let us begin by learning from history, with the simple fact that our ancestors were welcomed to this already populated continent with a sense of true hospitality. Remember where the pilgrims were starving in Provincetown? And then in Plymouth, it was the first peoples who brought them food, taught them how to plant and cultivate corn. Was it in their best interest to do that? It was the native peoples who cared for, helped to hunt, and sustain those earliest of settlers. They would have perished without the native people's help. That is what the spirit of radical hospitality is all about. The first people now consider Thanksgiving a day of mourning because sharing the land wasn't enough for our ancestors. We had to own it. Our warped way of being in relationship with the land and the first people wore out our welcome rather quickly. By 1675, all-out war was declared by the native leader, King Philip, so named by us. Reflecting on history, I personally believe that we have a sickness within us. We are bathed in the reality of it. We are barraged by it on a daily basis. We are handcuffed with golden handcuffs to it and have been for generation upon generation. It is insidious, and it's called entitlement and greed. We have a desire for more land, more power, more prestige, and money. Some of us fight mightily against the allure of more, but it is there. We try to do our part to protect all people and our planet, but do we do enough? I often see garbage, beer cans, or a stray piece of discarded furniture like a couch on the side of the road on my drive here to First Parish. And I wonder, how did it get there? Where did it come from? Who would want to do such a thing? And why? What can we do to turn the tide? During my childhood, and in my childhood home, both of my parents were smokers. They smoked in the car, they smoked in the boat, they smoked in restaurants. It was the thing to smoke and to drink. Both of my parents died from lung cancer. My father was 59 and my mother was 68, and yet I never smoked. I was surrounded by a culture of smoking. My aunts, my uncles, my cousins smoked. Why didn't I smoke? Because in elementary school, there was a program that brought human lungs to school with an educator. Non-smoking healthy lungs and unhealthy lungs of smokers. Visually, it was remarkable, the difference. And I just held those real lungs encased in acrylic in my hands, stunned. I wondered about the person who belonged to this body part, their life, and their death. This one experience educated us about one fact, that if you smoke, you will get cancer and you will die. I went home and begged my parents to quit smoking for years. And because of the addictive nature of nicotine and the greed of the tobacco industry, they were unable to stop, and they both died horrible deaths. I still do not smoke because I was taught the real hard facts about the implications of smoking. How does this translate to what we can do about the realities of violence? First, we need to quickly shift gears on this planet from violence and greed to hospitality, compassion, and stewardship. We need to demand that the world's children get educated about the real dangers of violence in all forms. The real deal. We need to learn and teach everyone that we come in contact with that there are other ways to deal with anxiety and frustration and anger. And we need to be willing to truly intervene when children, teens, and adults exhibit aggressive behavior, including our president, who on Friday alluded to this being a time of calm before the storm. He's clearly endangering and endeavoring to intimidate and incite violence in our world. And we cannot, must not tolerate such acts of aggression from anyone at any level. Bullying and testing limits kills. Just last month in New Hampshire, young children endeavored to hang an 8-year-old boy of color with a rope from a tree around his neck. Thank the goddess he survived. But this is not an act of just a few kids causing mischief. This is the outcome of condoning violence of all types. Intolerance, intimidation, and bullying starts early and continues into adulthood. We have seen it in our own community of Sudbury, in the elementary schools, racial and religious slurs such as swastikas deface the school. Parents, protect the guilty. We have experienced violence at the high school level as well. Sudbury Lincoln children are children of privilege. Why do they turn to acts of violence? Maybe it is that our culture honors guns and violence in movies and games. We see poor behavior at the highest levels and are inundated with violence in the news. We need to get very serious about how we respond to violence and intimidation at any level, even in our own minds and in our own hearts. Think driving in traffic. I think that we each need to learn strategies of how to deal with our own frustration and anger. I believe that we need to learn how to truly value all life, including the life of this planet. We need to learn cooperation as our world becomes smaller and our resources become stretched. Collaboration and hospitality may be our only hope, and yet look where it got the Native peoples. My friends, we have two ways of looking at our current predicament. Either it's too late and we are beyond redemption, or we need to get radical about what we expect and what we're willing to do in order to personally evolve and make significant shifts in our country and our world. We have so much to learn, so much to share, so much to reform, and it begins in each one of our hearts, each one of our minds, with one very personal decision. Very basic. How radically committed are we willing to be to life, to love, to the pursuit of ethically oriented happiness for all? Inaction is a choice that we can no longer afford to make as a species. I've just dropped a ton on you guys. I'd actually like to, it happens every once in a while, do a talk back. If you feel compelled to say something or you have something on your mind that you'd like to share, or some strategy you've been marinating over for a very long time, this is the time to share that. Anyone?
Speaking out of conscience.
Paul. Nancy. A microphone's coming to you, so just give it a second.
Letter writing to papers expressing one's view is perhaps a way of influencing action in ways we cannot measure. I did notice, I think, that Las Vegas had disappeared from the globe as of yesterday, or perhaps there was something I missed, and there was nothing in a local paper. And I have been trying to gird up my writing skills to the point where I could fire off something that would not be a disgrace to have printed. But I do think that the expression of opinion, widespread expression of opinion in public, by public means, is a good thing to do and may lead to movements strengthened and moving toward action.
The average news cycle seems to be about a week at the most. 1 week.
Generous.
Yeah. It is generous. Actually, it's about 3 days, truly. But that's what happens to the marches. It makes great news for a day, 2 days maybe, and then it's gone. Chad.
It's also a divide and conquer strategy, right? In an era where there were, you know, a couple of issues that you could focus on every day, you know, if every 3 days, right? And every day there's something else to focus on, whether it's environmental, whether, you know, it's social justice, whether it's corporate greed, whether it's, you know, people getting shot to death. And it's just, it's exhausting.
It is exhausting.
Cycle that comes around, you've got to focus on the girl.
Absolutely.
Focus on work, or you know, we're just acquiring that consultants, you know, and who are saying, you know, do all of your people, you know, in your organization do jobs, right? And so it is so just confusing, mm-hmm. right? Because you know, you believe so strongly in all these things. There's so much else to focus on. You know, how do you maintain your sanity, you know, in the environment where it feels, as you said, you know, that there's so much on top of us. You know, sometimes it feels like, and I've been describing, you know, life recently as standing in quicksand with a stone on your head. But that is not a comfortable feeling.
Yeah. No, not at all. Yeah. Yep. Thank you. So I didn't focus specifically on gun violence or guns and how we can go after guns in our country, because I think it's a bigger issue. You know, Oklahoma, a guy planted bomb and brought down a whole building. So, you know, there's a lot of violence out there. And I think it's, when we focus on guns specifically, it becomes an us versus them situation. And it's this push-pull that we fight against. But when we talk about violence, no one wants violence, right? No one wants violence. So we can all get together on violence. Same with greed. No one wants greed and dishonesty like that, I hope. Those are the things that we can focus on together. And we may be able to make progress if we talk about violence. And that's sort of my take on this. With that, I'd like to take a moment in silence to reflect. For this we pray, blessed be. Amen. Please rise in body and or spirit to sing hymn 1024 in the teal hymnal supplement. May this be a house of peace. 1054, sorry.
Thank you.
First Parish is financially sustained by annual pledges, fundraisers, rentals, donations of time and treasure, and with this, our weekly offering. It is true that we all have expansive demands on our resources and time, and this is one more ask. Our work in the world is not done. We need all the resources that we can muster for the long haul. Thank you for your continued far-reaching generosity. Would the ushers please come forward to collect this morning's offering? That's not a call to action. I've never heard one. So I thank the choir and Deborah for picking the perfect offering. We thank you for being present in a worshipful way with us this morning as a way to stay connected with what is happening at First Parish. It is our practice to share announcements at the end of worship. Announcements are printed in the order of worship. They're also, you can find a calendar on our website. And there's also a screen in our entryway that is filled with photos and quotes and schedules for the next week, so please take a look at that. If you're a first-time visitor or a second-time visitor, we invite you to get to know us. And the only way to really do that is to consider spending some time with us. If you have any questions about First Parish or Unitarian Universalism, please do not hesitate to speak with myself or any of the members or leadership. Directly after worship, we, the members, host a coffee hour downstairs in our parish hall. All are welcome to share some nibbles, hot and cold beverages, and conversation. Visitors are especially welcome to attend. Are there any other announcements from the congregation? Great. Microphone is coming your way.
Good morning, Mark Trone. One more time. The 116th Harvest Fair is next weekend. First, thanks for everyone, to everyone who has volunteered. We have almost all of the positions filled, which is really great, so thank you. There are a few opportunities of need. Specifically, we have a couple slots, like the baked goods table later in the day, that we have no volunteers. But if you happen to be able to be around Saturday, please stop by. The sign-up sheets will be downstairs during the coffee hour. And if you're already volunteering, perhaps you can stop by and we can see if you might be willing to reallocate your time to fill some of the spots where we don't have anyone yet. So thank you.
Good morning, Leslie Lowe. I have two things. First, the Community and Hospitality Committee will not be meeting today after church. We have too many people out of town or otherwise unavailable. The committee is always looking for new members. Our job is to continue your worship experience downstairs in the social hour. We also support many of the things that happen on Sundays, as well as extra activities. The second thing is the call to action. I want to remind you that the Sudbury Town Meeting will be occurring October the 16th, so come and vote. There are some issues that are of interest to me personally, and that is someone is trying to rescind the individual water bottle sales ban, which we voted in last April. And the last article on the warrant is the proposal to make Sudbury a welcoming city, which is similar but different from a welcoming city. So come vote.
What's happening next Saturday?
Harvest Fair.
Right.
Several of you have volunteered to have yard signs. If you would please bring them back to church on Sunday, that would be really helpful to folks who are dealing with those. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Anne Marie Lanza, and the Women's Alliance will be meeting today in the bracket room at 11:45. We will be voting on a grant proposal, and we would love to have a quorum. So if you can possibly stop by, all women of the parish are invited. Please do. Thank you.
I see. This is E. Marie Pope. I'll have a petition downstairs available for signing, and I won't say anything more about it right now. But come see me if you're interested in signing a petition.
It's very relevant to what we were talking about today. I know that.
Fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again. Good and loving people, our time in worship has come to an end. No matter how weak or how frightened we may feel, we each have gifts that can make a difference in the world. In this coming week, may you do at least one thing: to support the broken, to welcome the stranger, to celebrate what is worthy, to do the work of justice and love. Be strong, be connected, be courageous. Each day act so you may be a little more whole. So may it be. Blessed be. Amen.